first true love meant all the world to me. Fire and ice, sweet love and lies. When it goes, you're all alone on winter's starry night. Sometimes right, but always wrong, there's nothing in between. Sweet love's good to me, but then you set me free. Fire and ice, sweet love and lies. When it goes, you're all alone on winter's starry night. Summer's loving you. The autumn winds reveal my sins in winter's colder through. Fire and ice, sweet love and lies. When it goes, you're all alone on winter's starry night. When it goes, you're all alone on winter's starry night.
You're listening to Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. I'm Barbara Leyenhard, your host and poet in residence. The shingles hung, come on in, join me, have some tea, settle down. My topic today is grief, fire, and ice. Fire and Ice is the name of the song that opened the show. It's about love and loss. I will explore grief and my loss of my mother to Alzheimer's and read some poems. My poems and others. First, what is grief? How is it expressed? Grief is an expression of love for the loss of a loved one or thing. Grief comes from the Latin word gravare, to make heavy, and gravare stems from the Latin word gravis, which means weighty. The name of my podcast states that poetry is the memoir of the soul. Everything we do, say, or feel is stored in our soul. The soul is our publisher of the memoir, and grief is a scribe, recording each day our narrative of changes, losses, and reckonings. Maybe a loved one has died, the most familiar cause of grief. Stinging, stabbing, and unrelenting pain, overwhelming sadness. Divorce. Even if you wanted it, you must grieve for the loss of a marriage you had envisioned but had failed. You've lost your job. You lose touch with old friends. The wedding is called off, or a natural disaster has stolen your home. Any political, social, and environmental change can elicit grief. Even a change in routine can elicit a degree of grief. Your doctor or dentist, whom you've had for years, has retired. Your favorite shops or restaurants have closed down. You lose a ring or a family heirloom. All transitions in life may call up grief. There are uncountable examples. Every day we become someone new. Yesterday, where did it go? So grief signals an attachment to a person, place, or thing. It is an anchor which can make life feel weighty. Again, primarily, it is a signal of your love for someone or something. and it's complicated. It is facets on a diamond. It has its own symmetry. It is a beautiful jewel, though it has cutting edges. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross opened a dialogue on five stages of or responses to grief. One is denial, refusing to understand or accept. Anger is another one, where we resist and revolt against the idea of loss. Bargaining is third. We want to make promises to feel better, to do better. Depression follows with sadness and despair. Finally, there's acceptance or reintegration. Although she lists these as stages, it really is a non-linear process. I personally feel many, if not all of these, at the same time. When I grieve, I'm shocked, perplexed, pissed, brave, and at a loss, all at the same time. Her model has come under criticism. Others add pain and guilt, loneliness and reflection, an upward turn, reconstruction, and working through to acceptance and hope. Grief is fire and ice, the fire of love, the ice of shock and dismay. Realize that no one grieves in the same way. We have different ways and different timelines. There are no rules. No two diamonds are alike. We can't tell someone to shut up or get over it. It's not fair. One may not outwardly grieve. That's okay. But I do. I still grieve childhood losses. We moved many times since the family was growing and Dad needed larger churches to support us. I lost track of friends and personal treasures put on the curb because we were so busy moving and we couldn't afford to move everything. I started grieving my parents' deaths even before they died. My city has changed a lot since I moved here, and I grieve the loss of old shops, now parking garages, old pastures with cows, now a Hy-Vee with a Walmart across the street. I keep pulling up on that anchor of grief, and only I alone can resolve my grief. I do that in many ways. Volunteering at a local hospice is one. Being a sacred companion, being of support, being a witness to another person's and another family's loss. Sometimes I feel another layer of grief dissolve when I hold witness to another's grief. And my being there is appreciated by those who can speak. I grieve through poetry mainly. Many of my poems express grief. And online you can find many poets who sing about their grief. Here is a well-known grief poem by Robert Frost called "Nothing Gold Can Stay." Nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold, her early leaf's a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief, so dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. Frost tells us in this lyrical piece that we face changes all the time. Eden, our paradise, has been lost. The sun both rises and falls. The seasons change and we grieve. Life is temporary, terminal, short-lived. Here is my poetic response to Frost. Before Eden fell. Before Eden fell, we were all immortal, our beauty captured forever in flora and fauna, so brilliant that light itself had to blink twice. Our true being stood naked without shame, our reflection more lustrous than knowing, brilliantine fabric, until the apple fell into mother's soft hands, our mother, the first to grieve her garden lost. How she clings to the maiden, the stunning beauty she once was, now deflowered, exposed to erosion. Our Eden, our innocence and purity, victim to change, to corruption, to decline, our undoing. We are young until we age. We are strong until we are weak. No one, no thing is our eternity, our heaven forever on this plane. Nothing lasts, so we grieve, feeling abandoned by joy and cast out of a divine place. We cling to the fading innocence of our Eden. Somehow we bless grief. Just as the state of Eden is temporary, so is grief, and this is hopeful. Sometimes we feel joy, so we choose to savor and nurture the bliss. We strive to be grateful for each moment, regardless of the emotion. We learn to thank and appreciate grief, the shadow with substance. Grief and joy share a continuum. On your device, you can adjust the brightness of the display. You can go 100% bright and blind yourself, as well as run down the battery faster, or you can go into dark mode. Grief is the dark mode. Maybe with grief, we need the dark mode to restore our battery life. Grief heals if we allow that rumination to explore our loss and somehow regain the strength to find a middle setting, balance. Grief is necessary. As a way to examine grief and loss, my focus today is Alzheimer's, which is a form of dementia caused by the building up of plaques, which are deposits of protein fragments that create spaces between nerve cells, and also Tau tangles form in the brain. The disease kills nerve cells, leading to shrinkage of the brain and the loss of brain tissue, according to the Alzheimer's Association at ALZ.org. People with this disease lose their memories and experience cognitive dysfunction and behavior and mood changes. They become confused about time and place, have trouble doing daily tasks, misplace things and can't retrace their steps to find them. They are unable to understand visual and spatial relationships. Around 47 million people in the world have dementia, and that includes 5 million Americans. We expect 14 million by 2050 will have dementia. Of the number of dementia patients, 60 to 80% have Alzheimer's. 16 million people provide unpaid care to these patients. More than 80% of caregivers are family and friends or unpaid caregivers. Consider the fact that these people may not be able to work full-time jobs. This means they are not contributing to society in the way that they had expected, and they may not be able to provide for themselves in their elderly years, having devoted years to caregiving and not getting paid. Or what if they work full-time and are still caregivers like I was? Mom was fortunate to afford to pay to live in an independent living facility before moving into assisted living. However, due to her cognitive problems, she thought her kids should have paid her rent and bills. What do people do if they can't afford a facility and their family doesn't have a proper place or money? Our house had stairs which she couldn't handle. I would be at work all day, and my husband had music lessons at home. Not an ideal situation for her. Part of my grief response was unrealistic guilt that I had failed as a daughter by not caring for her in my home, like she did in our home for her mother-in-law when I was just a child. I think she expected me to do the same. We think Alzheimer's is a normal part of aging, but not so. Just because we see a lot of people with Alzheimer's doesn't make it normal. The effects of this disease are traumatic on the family member and the caregivers. I sought grief counseling while I was caring for Mom. Because I worked full-time as an instructor, a job that took a great deal of time after 5 p.m., I gave up my social life to help Mom. She couldn't do it without me. I felt increased physical pain and sorrow. I'm not complaining, just sharing. I know I'm not alone. I became her memory and warrior. When I recall all the problems this condition caused for her, I honestly don't know how people who have no family can actually manage. At least I had siblings who helped support me in this endeavor. One brother in town and down the street, in fact. Even with this support, I was the primary caregiver. As I watched the disease progress, I thought she forgot recently information too quickly, told the same stories over and over, asked for the same information over and over, forgot names and appointments, and even started to forget her kids. She had 7 kids, and her problem and her purpose in life was to raise us kids. It hurt when she forgot us. A brother came to visit to surprise her, and he was standing outside the facility where she was living, but she walked right past him, hardly with a nod, because she didn't recognize his look as an adult. She could only remember him as a child. Because she saw a lot of me, she remembered me, but she would forget I was her caregiver and helper and her memory. When I arrived to pick her up for appointments, she would sometimes be gone. She had begged a ride from someone there for her appointment, forgetting I was going to give her one. So they would take her and drop her off at the curb somewhere with her walker. And I had no idea. I'm not sure how she even found the doctor's office, but I guess someone helped her. But she could have been injured or robbed. Mom also had trouble finding things and remembering how to perform simple tasks. I started writing her checks for her. She was always so proud of being able to take care of her money. Fortunately, she didn't drive, so I didn't have to take the car away. It isn't easy for the elderly to give up their cars and checkbooks. I'm glad she turned over the checkbook willingly. I always asked for her permission for things. She trusted me deep down, but she always forgot giving permission. Her memory caused other problems. She forgot she had medical insurance, so she would apply for more, and the companies would drop her, so I'd have to figure all that out. Or she was targeted by scammers. I had to take away her credit cards, Social Security card, and all that, so that she wouldn't give away personal information on the phone. Her mental capacity and cognitive reasoning skills were declining. She would come out to the car in 30-degree weather without a coat. The sun was shining. It was hot, period. So I started keeping an extra coat for her in the car. Changes in mood and personality are signs of Alzheimer's. She was type 2 diabetic, so I was taking her to the doctor to get her, checked out, and he found that her feet were in pretty bad shape. She was so embarrassed that she started hitting me in the car when I was trying to drive to the pharmacy for things to help her with the condition. I was so stunned by her violence that I almost veered into traffic. I couldn't always go to her place every night to put lotion on her feet, so it was just one more thing that she couldn't do for herself. So this kind of reactive, violent behavior is a sign of Alzheimer's and not other forms of dementia. She failed all the memory tests that her doctors gave. If she didn't know the time or place or decade or president and so on, she would say that, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. What's the difference? Who cares? Not important. I would often rush her to the ER because she was in such pain. But once there, she said she was absolutely fine. You wait for hours and she'd go, oh, I'm fine. I don't know what you're talking about. What was the big deal? I could be her memory, but I couldn't be her body. So I really had no idea, you know, where the pain was, what it was, because she could never remember where it was and why she said anything. If we went to the doctor, well, we went to the doctor a lot. They would talk to her, not to me. I would stand behind her and shake my head, no, 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 for all her answers were wrong. And the doctor would look at me suspiciously like, you know, I'm trying to take over her life. She also had trouble communicating. She would forget words or stumble over word choices. So she began to feel insecure and fearful. She constantly counted things, checked her purse over and over, and looked for things all day. At the assisted living facility, they wouldn't force her to bathe. If they asked three times and she refused, no bath. The same with clothing. They wouldn't force her to change them. I felt helpless at times. I couldn't be there with her all day and night to make sure she was bathed and dressed appropriately. Even if I was there to help her with her CPAP machine, I suspect she removed it as soon as I left. In 2016, my mother died after suffering from Alzheimer's for at least 13 years, and she was 89. After her death, my creativity resurged, and I returned to writing poetry. The fact that caregivers such as myself and many other poets can relieve grief through poetry supports my belief that poetry is the memoir of the soul. Online, you can find a lot of caregivers who are also poets. There's a lot of stuff on grief out there. Poetry is a means to storytelling, witnessing the human condition in a personal way. What am I thinking, praying, hoping for? How am I hurting? What has happened to me? How can I understand it? How can I share it? Who will witness my pain? Poetry provides a creative outlet for release of pain, for healing. It explores the soul. The poet is on a quest. We each have our Iliad and Odyssey, our magical journeys to share. We sing for self, but also we sing out about injustices that constantly flail us socially, politically, economically. We poets are bards spreading news and responding to whatever ails and threatens humanity. We fight the monster Beowulf each and every day. One monster, as I said, is Alzheimer's. Walter Bargan, Missouri's first poet laureate, who served from 2008 to 2010, said, when giving me permission to quote some of his poetry on his mother's suffering from Alzheimer's, and I quote, though there is an element of navigating grief, I think there was just as much the need, the urge to share this experience with others. Not only to declare this part of the human experience at this point in the march of time, but also to give others a sense of what to expect in dealing with Alzheimer's. He actually wrote a complete volume of poems on his experience with his mother's illness called My Other Mother's Red Mercedes, published in 2018 with Lamar University Press. His mother would tell him about his other mother, and that was part of her dementia. Notice in his quote how he supports my thesis that poets are healers. This volume of work is his memoir of his loss of his mother to Alzheimer's. Having lost my mother to Alzheimer's, I appreciate his experience. His poems let me know that I am not alone and that I can also share my experiences of loss and grief, and this takes courage. This poem by Walter Bargan called Migration expresses how I felt about Mom's typical day of tormenting confusion. I know when I was with her, I spent time trying to help her sort out her routine. This poem is called Migration. I stare at my mother when she asks where I live. I wonder if she knows who I am. But then I begin to wonder too, after she alludes to my other mother. Sure, I can name a few dozen birds summer and winter. There were the triton-like claws of turkeys in the snow on the driveway, the raucous staccato call of a pileated woodpecker, the insistent chatter of nuthatches, finches, and cardinals, deer hooves headed to the next ridge, the neighbor's boot prints where she walked the dog. When the snow melts, there's no trace of that walk. The birds riding the wind, the steps in different directions. I think of my mother just wandering around looking for things. I wrote a haiku about Mom's loss of memory, which was really the loss of her memoir. Grief seeks treasures. Robin missing eggs. Mother missing memory. Grief seeks treasures. Mom's memories were slipping away, both short-term and long-term. We used to be able to count on her sharp mind. She was always correcting Dad on his recall. Wrong again, he would say. But eventually, she couldn't count on her own memory. Sadly, I never took good notes on all the family history, making me unsure of the accuracy of her recollections. However, I knew she wasn't always accurate with her stories, and she couldn't claim authority on those matters anymore. In general, memories are powerful concepts. And so those with good memories hold a position of power in a group. Because her memories were fading, her power was collapsing. She was no longer the head of the house. She used to say to me, in fact, "You used to walk behind me, and now I am walking behind you." Alzheimer's steals the brightest memories. She sometimes forgot my birth order and had trouble recalling details of her children's births and lives. She couldn't even recall all her surgeries, which she would boast of frequently due to the trauma involved, but she depended on me to report the details after a while. There were also all the memories of all our moves, new houses, baking daily for 7 kids, and still making 100 cherry pies for an event to bring in a few dollars. The children also had their accidents and surgeries, but she would not recall them unless reminded. Long-term memories usually hold on the longest, but I heard fewer and fewer repetitions of her stories of wanderlust as a toddler riding her tricycle to the Sioux Locks in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. She still said she traveled to places like Mexico, but added Australia. I couldn't remember her ever talking about Australia in the past. So there may be confusion there. Still, she insisted she went there. These memories were her treasures, much as eggs are to a mother robin. The egg can also represent a treasure for what it holds. The egg itself represents creation, new birth, a new start, the birth of hidden potential. However, what was being created for my mother, a new life as a child who only lived in the present? The situation was not ideal by any means. If she had no one to help her, she could have been taken advantage of, much as a child would. Perhaps there would be some relief for her once her memories faded away completely, for she could finally forget her life pain. Once I wondered what would happen if she forgot me. "Mom, what will you do or say if you forget me? You'll probably say I am so much nicer than your daughter, Barbara." And she said, "If I forget who you are, just remember that I love you and that I would never mean to hurt you." Grief seeks treasures. I sought the memories of the mother I once had so that I could have my mother back. My mother lost her memories and her personal power or status, so she lost treasures. The robin seeks her eggs. What potential was lost in the mother-daughter relationship? What could we have birthed in our union as mother and daughter that was aborted by a brain disease? These are issues that all children whose parents have Alzheimer's and all people with loved ones suffering from this disease face. My poem, Erosion, describes how I saw Mom's mental disintegration in terms of imagery. Erosion. A garden once planted in spring, bearing life in shade and sun, is now tangled with weeds and blight. A hardy yield, once sustained by dew and noon rains, now forgets in autumn light. Baskets of gold, having bloomed and stretched for sun, now shrivel, scorched by drought. Honeysuckle, a trespasser in flora that once nurtured monarchs and bees. Wisdom of soils and seedlings now crumbles to dust. Once a bounty of bliss, now wild bramble on depleted soil, her secret garden. I console myself with memories of Mom from my childhood. In my poem, Picking Blueberries with Mom, I am supported by her strength and resilience. But the poem may portend her return to her childhood in her elderly years as her ravaged mind slipped back into girlhood. Picking blueberries with Mom. On hot summer Michigan days, Mom loved picking wild blueberries. We would be on that promised trip to the beach of Lake Superior when suddenly our plans would change at the sight of wild patches of blueberries in a meadow drenched in searing sun. We would leave the car by the dusty road and barrel out for her sake to scatter in the patches. Truthfully, berry picking was not my love. I thought we were heading one place, only to be sidetracked by this venture, our trip to the lake postponed. Yet Mom took to the field like a young girl, her smock stained blue and her lips made ready for purple kisses. While I kept watch on the tree lines for hungry bears, she lost herself in the foraging, requiring us to gather what we could in our shirts. My back ached as I did this work, and I impatiently waited to be on our way, to seek some relief in cool lake water, away from bees, mosquitoes, and flies. Yet Mom looked rejuvenated by her adventure. She sang as she picked, her tunes resounding as prayers. I didn't realize blueberries were regenerative, bringing forth blessings and eternal optimism our way. Mom was radiant as she harvested this bounty, as though Mom was radiant as she harvested this bounty, as though recapturing the time when her mother took her to her first blueberry patch, where she learned a way to halt time and sing in meadows. This poem captures a bit of Mom's Eden, the maiden dancing and singing in her lush berry patch. Did she not see the monster lurking, that bear, ready to steal her fruit? No. She was enraptured by the now, not worrying about her mind eventually turning to bramble. Mom feared dying. I tried to console her by telling her about Clarissa Pinkola Este's audiobook, The Radiant Coat, Myths and Stories about the Crossing Between Life and Death. Este describes death as a companion throughout life, worn as a radiant coat that ages us. And it ages with us. My poem, A Fine Coat, is reminiscent of this metaphor. A fine coat. Grief, a tailor for death. Each garment made to suit. new buttons attached each year, hems altered, seams made strong by threads of time, pockets lined with truth. Grief takes threads of every color in and out. Red rage borders blend flecks of gold. It makes a fine coat, so soft to the touch. How surprising this fine linen, such a close friend, worn to ragged shreds, worn to the bone, death companion since birth. Death swaddles us, takes us little by little, for this we grieve. One day a babe greets us from the womb with tears, and later shares tears for our passing. We are dressed in death, tailored memories of laughter and sorrow, joy and despair, guilt woven into forgiveness, grief into love. Why do we fear this lavish coat comforts us? Grief, a tailor, hired at birth to clothe our lives, worn to tatters with threads, left to line our souls. She liked to listen to my poetry but didn't understand it because of her condition. Regardless of how long ago she died, I'm still resolving my grief, as this poem shows. Maybe this is my mother speaking. The name of the poem is Grace. The leaves have fallen and stomped to dust. I am laid bare, exposed to wind, my limbs brittle, still pleading for a meal of sun. Some days too short for food, nests lay bare as squirrels forage. The wind cools me to my roots. I am glass, holding on to my reflections, lest they be lost to twilight. Grace clothes me in a gown, meant for a bride embracing her heart. This pure finery sparkles as diamonds on my icy bow. I rest with the angel of mercy. As I look back over my poems, I think this one is also for and about Mom. It's called Sunset. Sun slumbering into snow dogs, pin oaks guarding their leaves, fading attachments to their caregiver, eyes of moon, skin of ash, cramping fingers clinging to comfort, to their refuge in bitter wind. Leaves take to faith, though ripped from the branches and swept away for flight to earthen mulch and beds for worms. Mother is one of the most holy archetypes. Did you know that God has a wife? Her name is Asherah. She was worshipped alongside Yahweh as his consort by the ancient Israelites, but she was edited out of the Bible, according to Raphael Patai, a historian, and also other scholars say the same. Asherah is described as a fertility goddess depicted as a tree symbol. I happen to find trees to be very inspirational in my poetry and didn't know this connection to Asherah until recently. You can easily do a Google search and get more information, and I hear a new book is out about her, the rising goddess. My last poem, Weeping Willow, shows gratitude to Mom and all mothers lost to Alzheimer's, but I think it also shows gratitude to Asherah, who lost her title as God's wife, but whose power is still quite evident, undeniable, unending, and mighty. She is our mother. This is called Weeping Willow. Weeping Willow. When the old willow weeps, her shoulders bow to the light, for her ancient tears sing in tune with the spheres. The light binds limbs to leaves and defies the shade. Her skirt, a shelter to the fallen, making good blankets and walls, as it's her learning and duty, her strength, in harmony and balance, to stand firm in storms. So we go to her, our pain, her food, transmuted into swords and light for our battles and healing. In her tears, no regret. Grief and despair stand aside. In the shadow of this humble sallow of time, we bow to her in gratitude. Thank you for listening. This is Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul with Barbara Leonhard. My husband, Derek Leonhard, wrote the tune I picked for this podcast called Fire and Ice. He plays the banjo in Ironweed Bluegrass Band. For bookings, contact Jane Accurso at gmail.com. Jane, J-A-N-E, Accurso, A-C-C-U-R-S-O, one word, at gmail.com, or go to ironweedbluegrass.com. You can find most of my poetry at WordPress, on WordPress at Extraordinary Sunshine Weaver blog. My gratitude to Walter Bargan for his generosity in allowing me to share his work. His books are at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, in local bookshops, and I hear tell, in the trunk of his car. You can reach him at walterbargan.com. Robert Frost, wherever you are, thank you for allowing me to read your poem, Nothing Can Stay. Again, thank you everyone for joining me. Just leave your teacup on the table, I'll take care of it. Until next time, remember, you too can write your own poetic memoir. Thank you again.